That's Buddy Green along with Buck White, and there's power in the blood, and there is indeed. It is 12 minutes after the hour on I almost said a mellifluous Monday, but it's a winsome Wednesday is what it is. And I can tell because I'm looking at Doug Greenwald right now, and he only joined us on Wednesday mornings. Doug Greenwald of Preserving Bible Times, he's a senior teacher, teaching fellow there, and the executive director thereof. Doug, how you doing out there in Columbia, Maryland today?
Well, good. If I'm the reason it's Winsome Wednesday, then you're deep into hyperbole again, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, gotta make it. Well, this is theater of the mind, you know. And so we
mine are yours.
I'd be safer with yours, I think, and I'd feel a lot safer that way. Yeah, Doug Greenwald is in charge of Preserving Bible Times, and if you're new to us, he joins us just about every Wednesday. Has now for almost 6 years. And we have a powerful library of podcasts with Doug's teaching conversations. And Doug teaches the context, particularly of first century Israel. That's the biblical context. And also in the last couple of years, we've learned a lot about the Roman context behind Paul and his writings as well. And it's been an eye-opener. And it all kind of comes together in Zeeland, Michigan, coming up here in, well, less than a month now. It's June 12th, 13th, and 14th. It's the IBC conference. Doug's in charge of that, and I imagine things are getting pretty busy about now, huh?
Well, they are, and for your readers who aren't familiar with IBC, that's shorthand for Institute of Biblical Context. Mm-hmm. And we've been dreaming about having a national conference with multiple speakers on biblical context for several years now. And since last August, I've been, you know, not exactly full-time, but a substantial part of almost every week has been devoted to this. And I think I've been in the weeds for so long, pulling all the pieces this together and identifying the pieces and organizing it, that I couldn't see the mountain until just a few days ago, because I've been working with the various faculty speakers, all world-class experts in biblical context, getting their participant note outlines in, reviewing their PowerPoints, and we finally pulled all of the participant outlines together and got a designer to make it all look like family, uniformly, one template and design style. And I saw the finished product of that this past weekend, and it just struck me over the head. This is a 153-page conference notebook of participant notes on 38 different topics of biblical context, and it just sort of hit me between the eyes. This is remarkable.
My goodness.
This is a fabulous resource. It's the kind of thing that's never ever been done before.
Well, you say it's as a conference resource, but this could stand on its own, probably, I'll bet.
It really could, and if the Lord blesses us with sufficient funds to be able to bring out the video of the conference that we're going to do out on the DVDs, this will be an extraordinary resource. But even if that doesn't happen, these 153 pages of contextual outline notes on 38 different topics is just a resource that's never existed. No one's ever approached it this way. And so it was been exciting for me to finally see one of the mountain peaks from all this work we've been doing. And it was surprising, the size, extent, and scope of what we have been able, the Lord willing, to pull together to share with God's kingdom in however many ways that presents itself.
Well, you've been one of the prime movers behind the Institute of Biblical Context. And you've talked to us many times here about how there's been a void in that area, actually, for hundreds of years, if not thousands. And it's really now just coming to the fore, isn't it?
Well, in a broader sense, what we do is called ICE, Integrated Contextual Exegesis. Exegesis is the fancy theological word for original meaning. And our thesis is that unless you put all the contextual threads back together that the biblical authors just assumed their audience would know and understand, 90% of which are now not part of our Western way of thinking, that we'll never see and experience the full depth and richness of the gospel messages, the encounters, the parables, the teaching, the events. And that's been demonstrated 1,000 times, as you know, as we've do that on this program, as well as many of our other teaching.
And it's more than just history, isn't it?
Well, it's history, to be sure. There's a historical context, but there's a cultural context, and that is an immense subject. It encompasses how a village operates in the first century. It encompasses how the whole temple scene works. It encompasses understanding the intertestamental history period, which is the stepping stone to the Gospels. It includes the literary context. It includes the visual context. What does the site look like? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's lots of pieces to weave together. And from 30,000 feet, the ability to put your fingers on what all those pieces are was almost impossible, except for perhaps the last 15 or 20 years, thanks to laptops and the web.
And technology. You were able to make a video DVD form of pretty much all of Israel, weren't you, at one point with Preserving Bible Times?
That's part of the visual context. We did a 7-year filming project from low-level helicopters that flew a 360 around every major biblical site, Old Testament and New Testament, in Israel. And that, even to this day, is still a remarkable resource, even though it's 15 years old. And so I often use that, because the very first question you need to deal with in any passage of Bible study or preparing to teach or preach is, where are we? And that visual helicopter biblical site collection of 172 different sites allows us to actually take people on site and teach the passage where it happened. And sometimes that's really significant.
Well, clue us in a little bit, because David and I are going to be there at the conference in June. And give us a little teaser. What are some of the topics?
Well, I'm glad to know you're coming. Apparently your security clearances came through, huh?
Yeah, she said it was okay to go.
Anyone who thinks they're from East Dakota needs at least a double check on something.
Yeah, I'm off the no-fly list.
I'm expecting to be frisked at the Michigan border, but we'll find out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I am looking at a 1-inch stack of paper here, which is the output of what's going to go into the notebooks here. But let me just sort of review for you what day one is going to look like. Yours truly is going to open it up with what is integrated contextual exegesis. In other words, we all need to be on the same page. When we say that context matters, we have to have a common understanding of why context matters and how context matters and how to approach it. And what are all the pieces? What are all the components that have to be woven together from the clues that the biblical writers give us to allow us to get close to the original meaning? So I'm going to do that. That's probably going to take 30 minutes or so to define what biblical context looks like. And then I'm going to be doing the next plenary presentation as well, because I want to answer this question. Where has this been?
Good question.
Why have we never been exposed to it? And what can we do to get more? I'm going to address the first two pieces of that. And I highlighted that several weeks ago on this program, the 2,000-year overview of what has happened to integrated biblical context from century to century, actually millennia to millennia, and why only in the last 20 years has it started to come to the forefront for some people in God's kingdom, some institutions, some seminaries, and started to be taught perhaps the very first time. And all of that sets a nice backdrop for this conference. It is truly cutting edge. It is doing things and pointing out things and seeing things that the people in Jerusalem who were the first converts to Christianity, the first 20 or 30 years post-Pentecost, automatically knew but have just fallen away and gotten lost for historical reasons and cultural reasons, and only recently have been rediscovered, so to speak, so that we Westerners can learn how to think like first century Jewish village agrarian people and actually understand the words, the stories, the parables, the teaching, the way the people did who first heard them. That's original meaning, and the reason that matters is because that's where the intended transformational power of a passage is going to be found, where the original meaning is faced and recognized and pondered. And so I'm going to do that.
And by the way, you mentioned that we covered this. If listeners would like to recap that, there's a podcast from April 19th, which is the context of biblical context. And you talk about the pink water of Passion Week. So we were talking about Passion Week at that time as well. But that would be a good one to go back to and hear in detail what you're talking about now. And so you just go to the top of the homepage there and click on podcast and then click on Doug's name. And you'll see all of the podcasts there in chronological order, most recent at the top. And you can listen to them.
Because after traveling around for 15 years, you know, this is usually what I hear from pastors or teachers in parachurch ministries. Wow, where has this been? How come I've never been exposed to this? Where can I get more? That's the question I want to deal with, because the people in the audience will undoubtedly have come from that same journey. And it just sets a nice stage, I think, also to realize how groundbreaking this conference is. Anyway, so those are the first two plenary sessions. Then the next one is going to be on frameworks. You know, first you got to know, what does integrated contextual exegesis look like? And then you got to understand, why is it we've missed it for 1980 years? And now, how should we approach it? And the approaching of it is in terms of frameworks, contextual frameworks. One of the things that Western evangelicalism has done to all of us is give us 1,000 facts void of frameworks that tie all those facts together. And so the very next step is to give people contextual frameworks to put in their Bible study toolbox so that they can have an organized way to approach a passage in terms of contextually restoring it so that we can get back in sync with its first century understanding. So that's what we're going to do, and that will take us to the afternoon break. This is going to start at 12:45 on Monday. Then we take a break, and then we come back and are going to have a 45-minute teaching session on biblical geography. The very first question you need to ask in approaching any passage in Scripture is, where are we? That's a geography question. And what's exciting about that is that's going to be taught by Dr. Cindy Parker, who's got a PhD from a university in England, who is now on the faculty at a seminary and Bible college around Philadelphia. And she is a member of what I call the third generation contextualist. Guys like Kenneth Bailey, and if we stretch way back, Alfred Hedersheim, I think we could say are like the first generation contextualist. And then people like Gary Berg, who's going to be on our faculty from Wheaton, would be second generation contextualists, and I would probably be fit under that umbrella as well. And then there's a whole new generation of people under 40 who are the third generation. And one of the exciting things for me as a second generationalist is to be able to identify and bring to and give exposure to these fantastic third generation contextualists who are further around or along before they even get to the age of 40 than I am at almost double that age.
Well, this is watching your work, the groundwork you've laid, picked up and run with into the next generation. I think that's got to be very rewarding.
In terms of just a commitment to integrated contextual exegesis in biblical context, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They have a vision for it and a clarity for it and an understanding of it that I just admire. And I can't wait to learn things from them. Mm-hmm. I think there'll be a lot of cross-learning going on. But anyway, Cindy is going to focus her on the importance of place in the Jewish mind. And of course, that's geography. Because in a small country that's probably the size of Vermont, that has thousands of years of history, a lot of things tend to happen in the same place, just in different eras. And the institutional memory of people in this land is phenomenal. Something that happened 700 years ago is as fresh in their mind as if it happened yesterday. And so what happened in the past is often prologue for what's happening in the present in the scriptures. And she's going to be developing that theme, the significance of place in the Jewish worldview. And she is really good at it. She's lived 5 years in Israel. She does 3-week summer intensives every summer in Jerusalem. She's attended and taught at Jerusalem University College. And just a fabulous addition to our resources of the faculty here. So she'll kick off the mid-afternoon section on that. And then we're going to finish up before our late afternoon break here on Reverend Dr. Chad Pierce. Chad is another third-generation contextualist. He's going to talk to us about the importance of the intertestamental period of time. And he's titled his 45-minute presentation, The Time Between, Early Jewish and Christian History and Literature, and Its Impact on Our Understanding of the New Testament. So much of what's implicitly understood in the Gospels, for example, by Jesus, is what happened in the intertestamental period of time.
You know, that's a big void in our minds, isn't it? Out west here.
It's like a hole.
Yeah.
Big black spot. Okay. And so, you know, during that period of time, the Greeks entered this land. And that has tremendous significance and impact even during the time of Jesus. The Pharisees were birthed in the intertestamental period of time. The Maccabean revolt took place, which allowed Jews to be governing Jews again for the first time since David and Solomon. It gave birth to the Hasmonean dynasty, who were the rulers of that period. And the things that the Hasmoneans did shaped the impact of some of the issues that are going on in the gospel period of time. We have the whole issue of the return of the exiles, many of them from Babylon, in like the 140, 130, 120 BC timeframe. And how they settled in the north, and what their worldview is, and what their mission statement is in their own eyes, and how villages like Nazareth became populated, because they're not Old Testament towns, they're intertestamental period towns. There's just a wealth of insight there that's really not only really helpful, but absolutely needed sometimes to contextually develop passages. And Chad is going to be developing that subject. His PhD is in Rabbinic Judaism, and the rabbis also are birthed during this intertestamental period of time here. And so that should really be a fascinating lecture presentation. Then we have the late afternoon break, and we do one more major plenary presentation before dinner time, and that's from Dr. Gary Berg. Now, Gary has spent 2 or 3 decades teaching at Wheaton College and graduate school. Just recently signed on at the seminary, Calvin Seminary in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He was in school in Lebanon during the Lebanese Civil War. And because of the volatile nature of that period of time, sometimes class was just suspended for a week or 2 or 3 or a month. And so when one of those times happened, he went over to a seminary in Beirut and heard Kenneth Bailey for the first time. And was so taken by biblical context that he decided to devote his next 40 years of his academic career to biblical context. And he's probably about 60 years old right now, and he is the world's foremost expert in the Gospel of John. And he's going to be on faculty.
I'm going to look forward to that.
Oh, yes. And so he's going to talk for 50 minutes on reading the Gospel of John from the first century Jewish perspective. Now, the reason that's really intriguing is, while Matthew and Mark wrote to the Jewish audience, they were much more explicit in their contextual references than John is. And that's because maybe they were thinking about diaspora Jews and who didn't have a full contextual understanding of things. But anyway, John is just very, very different. He is much more implicit in his contextual clues than Matthew and Mark were explicit in making reference to the contextually significant issues in their respective Gospels. It's like John is written to insiders and insider Jews, and the other two Gospels are more like written to outsider Jews. And so much more is assumed in John contextually that is not mentioned. It's as if he's almost speaking in contextual code, because these insider Jews know all the implications of what's between the lines of the text. And so he's going to develop that unique perspective that is the Gospel of John. And just to put that a little bit further in the rearview mirror here, in academic circles, in circles of higher criticism, up until the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls, there was a growing body of thought that said John really wasn't written by John, and whoever wrote John wasn't Jewish, okay? Mm-hmm. Because the literary construct and the linguistic words and structure that's used in John isn't like Matthew and Mark, who are Jewish authors, okay? And that was really gathering some momentum. And then the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, and it took a while for the impact of that to spread around. But as the Dead Sea Scrolls began to be released, we began to see this is obviously Jewish material written by a Jewish sect. And lo and behold, the language that they use and the linguistic structure that they use bear remarkable similarities to the Gospel of John. And so now that just sort of exploded that hypothesis that the Gospel of John wasn't Jewish in its origin, the Dead Sea Scrolls paralleled the construct, the linguistic, the idioms, the phrases that were used in John, and that whole theory just evaporated and died. And so the Dead Sea Scrolls really confirmed that John was written by John and he was truly Jewish. It was not a synonym for somebody else, pseudonym. And so, you know, it's all part of why John is such a fascinating gospel. Anyway, we've got the world's expert for John with us.
And what you've just said suggests that probably over the years we have a lesser grasp of what John was talking about than we do from reading the other Gospels.
Yes, or to state it the other way, on the other side of that coin, there is much more contextual restoration required or needed to fully appreciate John than would be true for Matthew and Mark.
Well, still my favorite book. I'm going to go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, we just finished a whack at a series of Bible studies in the Book of Revelation. And one of the questions I got constantly was why do writers write in this convoluted? You got to look for the clues. You got to look for this. Got to look for that. What's the point of that? And I took a couple stabs at it. Between keeping the information secret from the Romans and the enemies of the church and that answers another question, or at least supposition. Is that there was a theory out there that John was not Jewish, and then therefore wrote in a different manner than the other gospel writers. Do you know if Dr. Berg is going to talk about Revelation at all?
Not on the program, no, because we're totally focused on Jesus in his context for these 3 days. Okay. But the speakers, the faculty, are going to be mingling out in the narthex on the breaks and before the start of the morning sessions. So, if you have individual questions about Revelation, because he's a New Testament scholar as well, he just has specialized in the Gospel of John, people are going to be free to interact with the faculty and ask whatever questions they wish to ask.
Well, see, that's the advantage of being there in person. You get to do that. That's exciting. Yeah.
And sit around the table with them at the dinners and the lunches, because we're going to be doing that on site just to maximize our time together. So anyway, we're now going to take a dinner break. We're doing the dinner on site at the church. It's white tablecloth. It's going to be pretty nice. Mm-hmm. And then the evening program starts up after a 15-minute worship set. And I'm really looking forward to that as well. All of the major sessions are going to be kicked off with a 15-minute worship set from a 6 or 7-piece worship group. And I think that will really set a nice tone for our time together. But the first evening subject on the first day is Reverend Brad Gray, who's my sidekick on this one, my co-partner. He's the guy that when he heard about my thoughts for the Institute of Biblical Context just really resonated with it and said, let's do it. And he and I have been carrying that water bucket since. That was back to last July. He's going to be teaching on Jesus and the world of the rabbis. So, you know, Jesus walks into the world of the rabbis. The whole rabbi-disciple world. Yes, everyone knows and understands that. The rabbis have a very specific way of teaching. They teach in a structured way called inverted parallelisms. They're drawing upon rabbinic parables, stories, of which Jesus takes a goodly number of those and gives them a slightly different twist to them. But you can see strains of Jesus's parables back in the rabbinic stories that they told. And so we have to understand this whole world of the rabbis and how they have shaped rabbinic Judaism, how they have created all these issues of ritual purity that everyone knows and understands, and it's just implicit to the text, and the similarities and the differences between Rabbi Jesus, Yeshua, and the other rabbis of his time, to help us appreciate what's really unfolding before our eyes on the pages of the Gospels. I'm really looking forward to this one. Brad is another one of the third generation contextualists, and he is light years ahead of where I was at that same age. And he is just a marvelous, marvelous communicator. And personally, I think people are going to be just absolutely blown away with him.
Well, this should give us a handle on what the average poverty-stricken resident of first century Israel, how they would have seen Jesus and thought of him.
And that's the whole point.
Yeah. I'm ready.
So that's going to unfold for 50 minutes or so. And then our final set for the very first day, which is going to go from about 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. on that opening Monday, is the faculty are going to do many contextual vignettes. In other words, we're each going to share some of our favorite passages. Some portions of the 3 days are assigned topics because they fit a required flow, but I also wanted to have the flexibility for each of the faculty to share in fairly short formats, you know, 10, 12 minutes each, their favorite passages. And so that's how we're going to end up Monday night. And Dr. Gary Berg is going to kick us off with overviewing and highlighting the parable of the unforgiving servant. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be followed by Cindy Parker. Dr. Cindy Parker, who is going to develop the baptism or immersion of Jesus in Matthew 3. Then yours truly is going to do lifting up the vine from John 15:2. And then Chad Pierce is going to do 10 or 12 minutes on the triumphal entry, take one from Luke 9. And then Reverend Brad Gray is going to finish up with Matthew's genealogy of Jesus. And what I like about this, these are all favorites to each one of us. And if you've ever heard a person teach one that's one of their favorites, there's just a special enthusiasm, a special energy, a special vitality that comes with that. And so it will allow the audience to get quick, deep insights into five different passages here in 60 minutes or less, and it will also allow each of the faculty to share some of their favorite tidbits, their real gems and pearls with the audience. And we're going to repeat this pattern throughout the other days as well. But I think it's going to be a nice blend, a nice format contrast to the more longer formal presentations that comprise the earlier part of the first day.
And that's just day one. This is going to be
that's just day one.
Powerful 3 days. What should we bring?
Bible? A sense of excitement, a sense of expectation.
Okay.
You want to bring your Bibles. We've designed the notebooks with white spaces so you can take notes on the page that the speaker is actually teaching to. And maybe bring a handkerchief so that you can cover your mouth when your jaw drops for aha moments that are going to be coming our way.
That's what we look to you for, is those aha moments. There have been countless aha moments over the years here with you. How do people get involved if they're still able to make time in mid-June and they'd like seats? Do you still have some openings?
We do, and you can go to the Preserving Bible Times website and click on the tab that says Institute of Biblical Context and see all these topics that we're going to be covering and sign up. Or there's another website. It's the Institute of Biblical Context website where you can also register on it as well.
Hmm. And if you're listening this morning and you're on BrokenRoadRadio.com, I know some of you are listening on iTunes and your phones and other things, but there is a direct link to Preserving Bible Times and their website on our homepage at BrokenRoadRadio.com. Click on it. It'll take you to where Doug was just referring you, and that's PreservingBibleTimes.org.
And if you'd like the notes of the topics that I just briefly sketched, all of that is going to be in the conference notebook, 153 pages. It's worth the price of admission alone just to get that notebook in your hands.
Now just think how this will facilitate your own personal Bible study in the months and years to come after attending that conference. We're pretty excited. David, you ready for that?
I am. I'm ready. Oh boy, am I ready.
We'll be there. Doug Greenwald of Preserving Bible Times. Again, so much. We're so thankful to you for the time you spend with us here. It's been a lot of time over 6 years here.
It has, and maybe next week we can overview days 2 and 3.
Well, we'll take a look. Doug, have a good week. We'll talk to you then.
Thanks, guys.
Bye bye.
Shalom.
Shalom, Doug.